How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. List goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Following up today on the busiest Wednesday ever. I haven't even watched all the shows yet. I got 2 episodes of Lucha Underground to watch tonight prior to the Brian and Vinny show, but I did get through the NXT show with Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor in the main event of the show. Likely, it is the final appearance of Finn Balor in NXT because they're taping TV and he's not there. So my guess is he will be drafted to one brand or another on Tuesday night, which has been the plan for a while now, as we've been talking about here on this show. Also last night, the first night of the first round of the new Cruiserweight Classic premiered on the WWE Network. Fun show, not a blowaway show or anything like that, but you got 32 talents from all over the world. And the first round is all about whittling them down. I believe that the Sweet 16 and all of the matches from that point forward are probably going to be pretty great. And hopefully by the time all is said and done, it will be a legendary WWE tournament. Also, the UFC Fight Night 91. Yesterday on the show, I talked about how everybody was so excited about the various wrestling shows, but nobody was talking about UFC Fight Night 91 on FS1. Michael McDonald and John Lineker in the main event. Lando Vannata in the semifinal, who doesn't even have a Wikipedia, was never even a UFC fighter prior to last night. My God, what a show that was. UFC Fight Night 91 was awesome. If you didn't see it, I hope you recorded it, because there were a lot of great fights on there. Whatever you want to talk about today is fair game. Phone calls, emails, text messages. I will send out the info after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network. That's right. Yep. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Studio line today, 425-488-0525. Toll free, 844-411-5411. Text messages, 425-780-7566. All of these numbers on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We are going to take your phone calls today and emails and everything. Dave will be joining us, Dave Meltzer, in the second segment of the show to talk all the news stories in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. But television, there was a lot of it. Mike, what did you watch?
I watched the Cruiserweight Classic, and I watched the top 3 fights on UFC Fight Night. I still haven't seen Nakamura and Finn Balor yet, which I know for some people will sound like it's the worst, most devilish thing one can say. To be fair, I've seen a lot of these two guys from over the years, and one thing everybody has said to me is, you've seen a lot of these two guys over the years, don't compare it to that, but on the grand stage of NXT, it's a pretty great match, but I'm not rushing to see it. I will see it within the next 2 days. I'll probably see it tonight, to be fair, so I could comment on it tomorrow if anybody is still interested in such. But that aside, it was really a great night. And UFC 200, we talked about how some people were a little disappointed because, if for nothing else, it is hard to live up to that kind of hype when it comes to UFC shows. And as we've seen with a lot of UFC shows and boxing shows, a lot of really with combat shows over the years, it always tends to be the shows that you least expect or get lulled into a false sense of security over that end up really surprising you. And the entire card, from what it seemed like and certainly from what I saw last night, lived up to the hype. God bless Lando Banana for stepping in and taking that
Lando
fight.
Banana?
Whatever his name is, taking that fight against Tony Ferguson on short notice, Landon Vannata, because that was great. And I know this makes, I got to be honest, I know it's probably the thing that people want to hear about the least, it was this fight night show, but I am even more disappointed now that Nate Diaz is fighting Conor McGregor, because to be honest with you, I would love to see Eddie Alvarez make a title defense against Nate Diaz, and I am dying to see Khabib and Tony Ferguson face off before either one of them gets a title shot. I've got to see these two against each other.
Well, I can't wait to see Conor and Nate, too, because they will trash talk to the moon, which is
That's true.
My favorite part of mixed martial arts, other than the fights. I guess there's not much else to mixed martial arts, but Tony Ferguson and Lando Venata, or Landon Banana, as Granny would say, or Mike here. That was a really good fight. In fact, that was the best. That was the best bout I saw all night. I enjoyed that more than the Nakamura-Balor match. I know everyone's kind of getting on the Nakamura-Balor match because many people who have watched Nakamura's matches in New Japan and Balor's matches are going to say, well, you know, it was a WWE version of Nakamura versus Balor. And you know what? They're absolutely right. But still, a WWE version of Nakamura and Balor is a really, really, really good match. So I have nothing negative to say about it aside from Nakamura's utter and complete lack of selling his leg during his comeback. But that is the way they do things in WWE. Because you see, the fans pay their money to see you do your comeback, and it would be taking away their enjoyment of the show if you did your comeback on one leg, or didn't do it because you were selling.
That's right.
We have to have Nakamura run and jump and kick to the point where even the announcers were like, doesn't seem to be affecting him much right now. And I was like, you're right, it doesn't. Perhaps it should, but who cares? The match was very, very good. The
See how quickly he stepped into the style, right? Everybody thought, see how
Yeah, that's
quick
what
he
I said last
up.
Night.
Yeah,
he knows exactly what he's supposed to do. And that is work like a WWE version of Nakamura. I don't hold it against the guy at all. There are plenty of guys who, they're great somewhere, and then they go to WWE, and they know what they're supposed to do, but they can't help themselves, or they still want to do things the way he used to do it, and they have a really rough transition. Now Nakamura, went in Rome, and he's in Rome, and he's doing exactly what they want out of him, because he's a genius.
Yes, if WrestleMania is the Tokyo Dome, and fine, then you could say that a big show like Survivor Series or Madison Square Garden can be Sumo Hall or Korakuen Hall. Okay, well, this was Sapporo. This was Yoyogi. This was I don't know where they were at for
this
IET
was the
for,
NXT
for this one.
Arena.
That's I'm trying to think of what the comparison would be, and I'm sure I'm missing
a good one
here. But
there isn't, because my point is, even if he were wrestling in a small building in Japan, if his opponent worked over his leg for 15 minutes, I mean, I promise you he would sell. But that's not what you do in WWE.
No, but you're getting the version of him he needs to put out there. It's not like Nakamura was Mr. Tokyo Dome every time he wrestled. I mean, yes, he was great. He's great now, but that's okay. And again, I haven't seen the match, so I don't know. Everybody has pretty much said the exact same thing you have. And hey, look, you know, again, a pedestrian NXT version of Nakamura and Finn Balor is still better than an NXT version of like Yujiro and Yano or something like that. So I'm sure the match is going to be just fine once I see it.
The match was just fine. All I'm saying, I don't want people to be too hard on the match because you're setting your expectations for something that you're not ever going to get, even if he works WrestleMania. Especially if he works WrestleMania. If he works the WrestleMania main event, he will not sell during his comeback because that's not what they want. And he knows that. So more power to the guy. If as a fan you can't accept that, I mean, I really don't know what to tell you because that's what they want and that's what he's been hired. He's been hired to be a WWE superstar. So that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's like booing Cien Almas for the character that he's got. This is what they want him to play. That's what he's playing.
I don't know about that. I could boo him for that.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of wanting to boo him for that, especially when you have the Cruiserweight Classic, when you look at like Grand Metallic and you look at what Mascara Dorada can do and did with the mask. It's like, man, boy, they blew it with Sombra, at least for now.
Caller, you're on the air. What's up?
This is Jim from Virginia.
Yes, Jim.
I watched Lucha Underground last night, and one of the best shows of the year I've seen. The bumps that they were taking were just crazy last night on Lucha Underground. I mean, the higher they went up in the arena, the matches, some of the bumps, the flips and bumps they took were, I mean, just crazy. I mean, they were just unbelievably high up doing backflips and all kind. It was a great show. The match, the elimination match, where Sexy Star won the Gift of the Gods title, was off the hook. And I really enjoyed Mil Muertes' death match with King Cuerno. It was just fantastic.
Well, it's their version of WrestleMania. They're pulling out all the stops, Jim.
They sure are. I tell you, one thing got me, you know, in the elimination match, what's the guy's name? Skillshot, is that his name?
Killshot.
Okay. He did like one of these Death Valley drivers on Mariposa on the apron, and I thought, man, he really hurt her because it was like kabam, you know. But she ended up taking him out, eliminating him with the kudo driver. So that deal. But I tweeted you the picture of the guy that wrestled the blow up doll. It's supposed to, they say his name is Kota Ibushi.
Yes.
Ibushi.
Yes, and we went over this yesterday. Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, so that's the one. I sent you a picture of who he was.
Yeah, I tweeted out the match itself actually yesterday.
It was awesome. Basically what he's doing is wrestling himself.
Well, yeah, that is exactly what's happening. You know, Jim, there are alternates in the Cruiserweight Classic, so it's possible that if somebody gets injured, perhaps the doll could replace them to face Kota Ibushi in that tournament.
Wow.
You just never know, Jim, because anything can happen in the WWE.
Oh, yeah, you might see, are you saying we might see Yoshihiko? I think that's the killer doll.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't promise you that if the doll were deflated, it would sell, but you may actually see the match. Back in a moment with Dave, everybody, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer is joining us here today. A very newsworthy edition of The Observer is up right now for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. Main story, the sale of UFC for $4 billion. Dave, the biggest sale transaction in the history of sports, is that correct?
That's correct, and by double, because the old record was $2 billion.
That's nuts.
It's nuts, but you know what? If you evaluate, like, UFC is ridiculously profitable, and that's a big part of it, and there's also the feeling that in 2019 they're going to get a giant increase in television rights fees. I mean, that may not happen. WWE was counting on the same thing, and it didn't happen, but that's what they're buying, and they're buying the idea that they can expand it internationally into more markets, in particular China. So it's not as nutty as it seems on the surface, because if you do kind of like EBITDA times 14 or 16, you know multiple, it really comes out at close to $4 billion.
Now, Dana White, there was talk about his future. Obviously, as we all know now, he's staying on. And he cashed out. He's getting 9% of future profits. He apparently was getting dividends before it was sold. So at the end of the day,
annual dividends at the end of every year, and he was getting it was less than 9% though. But it wasn't that much less than 9%. Although last year was well under, but the year before was actually in 2014 it was above 9%.
So now we can safely, I mean, it was pretty clear why he would tip thousands of dollars and spend all sorts of money at casinos. He's doing okay right now.
He was always doing okay, but he's doing more okay now. Yeah.
Now, he did say that he was not exactly thrilled with the sale because he is no longer working every day with Lorenzo Fertitta, his best friend. And Lorenzo is maintaining. Do we know what his percentage is in this company?
It's a pretty small percentage, but I don't know the number. The WME people don't want, like with the old UFC, the percentages that everyone owned were pretty much common knowledge. Even though it was a private company, everyone kind of knew. The new company doesn't want people to know what the percentages are, that, you know, because there's all these different investors. I mean, it's not like before it was Flash, Dana, Lorenzo, and Frank Fertitta. So those four, and everyone knew their percentages for the most part. This is a bunch of different people put money in, and how much money they put in has been kept secret. How much stock everyone has is secret now.
Dave, obviously, we're got to see what happens going forward and what the plan is going to be as it relates to China. But we saw with Manny Pacquiao and Macau and what Top Rank wanted to do with expanding into China. We know, obviously, what Shane McMahon has tried to do and what other video providers and content providers have tried to do over there. I guess, you know, it's too long to really talk about here, but just what are some things that they need to do besides the obvious of trying to wrap up some Chinese talent that they can focus on over there in the same way that ONE FC has to a certain degree? But I mean, what do they have to do over there to try to make this work? Because everybody's got this eyes on this country, like, well, we've got, you know, 2 billion, you know, people that are ready to spend money, and that just is not the case. And it's, even if that was the case, nobody's Chinese,
and the government doesn't make it easy for outsiders to
exactly
make money in the country.
And they didn't go with their deals. So I mean, I'm very interested because everybody keeps talking about it. It's like, what can they really do here?
Yeah, well, WME has Chinese partners, and one of the KKK group, I believe, KKR actually, I believe that they
I hope
have
it's not the KKK.
KKK, yeah, they have Chinese partners as well. So there's something there. But it's still going to be difficult to navigate. You know, I mean, yeah, that's part of the thing. I mean, that's part of the value of the thing is the idea that if we can get China interested in this because it's got the potential to be a worldwide sport, then we can just make, you know, all kinds of money compared to what we're making now because there's all those people there. I mean, it sounds good in theory, and a lot of people, you know, and Shane McMahon's company is a perfect example of people who have had an idea that sounds wonderful in theory, but it just doesn't pan out.
You know, for years, people have talked about, will Vince McMahon sell WWE before he dies? And there are always arguments whether people thought he would or not. There were always names like Disney coming up. Maybe he would sell to Disney. It's in the family. He's never going to sell, blah, blah, blah. Do you think, knowing what you know about Vince McMahon over the years, that the headline stories, the New York Times, every single media outlet talking about how UFC sold for $4 billion kind of whets his appetite for the possibility of doing it himself?
I think if he could get $4 billion, he would sell in a heartbeat. He just sold stock at a valuation of $1.26 billion, I believe was the number. So the idea that that's the worth of his belief of his own stock, if someone offers him 3+ times what he just sold his stock, and this is only 3 weeks ago or so when he sold his stock. So if you're going to offer somebody more than triple, what he just sold for, he's going to take it in a heartbeat. I mean, he's already given you his price. I mean, like, granted, would he give up majority interest at that valuation? No, he wouldn't. But at 3 times, of course he would.
Dave, you know, Disney is always a great choice on paper because of what they would bring to the table, you know, entertainment-wise, and what in theory they could do with the brand. But because of what you know, the UFC has done, and because of Golden Boy's tie-in with like an AEG, would a company like this be, because they own their own arenas and they own their, there's things that go into hand in hand with them. Do you think that would be a possibility that would make as much or more sense?
It's a possibility. I mean, if you remember years ago, WCW was having talks with arena management. I forget what the group was.
SFX. And they
right.
should have oh, sold.
Yeah. They should have
sold. Well, in hindsight, they should have sold because weren't they offered like $75 million and they sold for $2.5 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would have been a great deal. But at the time, it didn't seem like such a great deal. But yeah, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense if you've got, especially WWE, where you can run so many shows, and if you've got a ton of arenas, and you know, you could. I mean, you have to structure it differently. But I mean, you know, there was a time when in your big cities you could run once a month and make it work. I mean, with all the TV they have now, I think that would be very difficult. But you know, still, if you've got enough arenas, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
I had somebody that was upset because I have not said enough positive things about the upcoming WWE draft. What positive things, Dave, could you say about the draft as we try it here again after 10 years of it not working?
Hopefully they learn from their mistakes. As far, you know, I mean, it looks, you know, you look at it from the, it looks more negative than positive, but, you know, if they shore up everything and everything, I mean, it can work. As far as, I think it will create more interest at first. I mean, it's just where we are again, like right away, I don't even worry about like what happens in July, the ratings in July and everything. You know, when we get to September and we see kind of like where everything stands, I mean, we'll know. I mean, you know, you're going to have shows with less big star power, but the opportunity is there to make new stars in theory. It gives with the less depth, it gives guys that were kind of middle and high middle a chance to be higher on the card because of the less depth on each brand. So some of them should be able to step up and become bigger stars because they have to be, you would think. You know, again, in theory, this is all in theory.
You know, something that I was just thinking about right now is there was a period about 4 or 5 months ago leading into WrestleMania where it was WrestleMania season, but there were so many top stars that were out on the shelf for whatever reason. And then a little bit after WrestleMania, guys started coming back and the stars were coming back and the television was so much better when they were back. And I realize they're going to bring up guys from NXT and they're going to rehire some guys. But as I think about, we have seen this year periods where the roster was full and periods where the roster was not full. And it was much better when the roster was full. That does not bode well for this draft.
Yeah, but they do have the opportunity to, like I said, bring, you can make new stars if you just, you know, get behind them. And I mean, one of the things that I think is going to be a problem is you have guys that you've slotted as non-stars for so long, and then you all of a sudden push them, and we're seeing some of that now. And that those guys, that's harder to make work because they kind of have that, yeah, everyone knows them and people may even like them, but subconsciously you've already been told that these guys aren't a big deal. Where somebody new doesn't have that stench on them of not being a big deal, they can come in and be fresh. So I think that, you know, a big part of this, huge part of this is going to be the Jason Jordan, Chad Gable, Nakamura, Finn Balor type of guys, and exactly where they get them, you know, going. If they get them at top level, then they're going to have they can have the depth. If they go in there and start them at the bottom and play 50-50 with them, I will guarantee that most of them won't make it. A few of them still might.
Well, I think it's safe to say that a lot of these guys will start near the top because they're going to have to, but I do not have a lot of faith based on watching the product for the past several years that they still won't do 50-50. They can't help themselves.
Except for like Roman Reigns and John Cena, they kind of do that with, you know, most people. And Roman Reigns, obviously. Yeah.
Well, the Observer this week, everybody, is available at WrestlingObserver.com. There's so many big stories in there. And next week, man, the draft on the day you go to press. What could be better?
The draft and the Super J Cup that same night. And This is a big weekend. The G1 starts this weekend.
That's right.
And I got a lot more news as far as UFC goes. It's going to come out with the sale. I mean, every day I'm hearing more and more things.
All right. Well, I hate to cut you off, but we have to do a break here. We'll talk more about this on Wrestling Observer Radio. For subscribers, WrestlingObserver.com. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Your turn, 425-488-0525. Toll free, 844-411-5411. Send your text messages to 425-780-7566. Got a bunch of those. I'll get into them in a moment. But to the toll free line, you're on the air.
Hi, Brian and Mike. I watched SmackDown yesterday, and I must say the segment with Miz and Darren Young was actually pretty good.
Oh yeah,
Darren Young gave a pretty intense promo, and like the highlight of that segment was Bob Backlund with his facial reactions. And I think he's kind of getting used to the whole production in WWE because he actually looked at the camera a few times.
He's a pro. Caller, let me interrupt you 1 second before you go on. I just want to tell the whole world something since I was ranting about The Miz a couple of days ago. If The Miz only did Miz TV and he was like a manager at ringside, he probably would be one of my favorite characters on the show. I just don't want to see the guy in the ring. I mean, Senior Benjamin in the Matt Hardy skits is so great. Do I want to see that guy wrestle every week and be the U.S. champion? Of course not. I can name 1,000 guys. And like, I love Paul Jones. I know Mike hates him. But man, I love Paul Jones when I watch those old NWA shows. Do I need to see him in the ring every week? No. And if he were in the ring every week and he never talked, I'd be pretty upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
Miz is a great personality. Miz, he does a great job on the, when he goes to a Today show or the Tonight show or whatever wacky show he's on representing the company, he never has anything to say, but it's just like Nakamura. That's what they want out of the guy. They want him to go and be a robot like John Cena and toe the company line and say some funny things and be charismatic. That's what he does, and he's great at it. He's great on Miz TV. He's great as an annoying manager. I just don't want him in the ring as the champion. I don't know why that's so hard for people to understand. Everybody has a role, and his is outside the ring, and he's great at it. Go ahead, caller.
And he also called Bob Backlund Howdy Doody, and Bob Backlund kind of made a kissy face at him. And also, there was also a throwaway segment with Kevin Owens. He's wearing a Finn Balor t-shirt. And I think that's like a possible feud when, you know, with the dress.
And he was wearing a Finn Balor t-shirt?
Yeah, is at the beginning of SmackDown, and he's wearing a Finn Balor t-shirt. He wasn't, like, talking about Finn Balor. He was just talking about what to expect on SmackDown.
Huh.
Really weird.
How about that?
What a troll. All
right.
They're both trolls. Hey, I want to thank you very much for the call. There's a lot of trolls in WWE. Hey, speaking of Senior Benjamin, If you go to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, I have tweeted out the newest video, which is the aftermath of the Final Deletion. It is the video that we talked about a couple of days ago that I had not seen yet, where Matt is in his theater room, and he's requesting green beans from Maxell.
He's got a server at his house.
Yeah. Well, duh.
Really.
He's crazy Matt Hardy. He's got a gardener.
Who else is going to serve Maxwell?
You know, maybe I'm out of my mind, but I may have enjoyed this one more than the other two.
You're out of your mind.
No, I'm really not. It was so great.
Green beans?
Dude, the whole thing. Did you see the whole thing?
I saw the whole thing. Yes, I did.
It's great.
The theater room is something else. I don't know who the heavyset gentleman is, who's the assistant and was also the, I don't know what exactly this dude was, but he was writing delete in the book at the end, as well as being the usher, I guess, at the Hardy Cinema. But whoever he is, I can see him as Matt further descends into madness, this guy being there to help support him along the way and being his town crier.
Just great. I love them. There wasn't even anything to it. It was just Matt being nuts in his house.
I would say probably get used to that because to me, it's hard. You can't keep now at this point Matt Hardy off TV. You need him continuing on in this role. It's just, I'm interested to know where they're going to go with this. I'm interested to know what is going to happen to Brother Nero / Willow /
dude,
whatever.
He's being deleted. That's like the next part of the story, according to Matt. They're going to delete him now.
I know they're trying to, but can you truly delete him? I guess we'll have to find out.
Well, I hope this leads to Matt having he's got to have a control center like NASA, like some area in his house that's got 55 televisions all in rows.
So you want him to turn into Howard Hughes kind of, basically.
He is already. He just doesn't wear those tissue boxes on his feet. But the point is the long
fingernails.
He's got to go in there, and each TV has to have a different social media outlet on it. Like one monitor has Twitter, one monitor has Instagram, one monitor has Snapchat. And he's going through one at a time deleting all of Brother Nero's social media accounts. That's where we need to go.
Now, does Brother Nero bring up Matt Hardy will not die? And
Brother Nero's deleted. It's over, dude.
So what about Matt's old past now? Has that all been deleted? Is it now just new Matt Hardy from this point forward? I know as you become a new father, it's like your life changes when that child is born. It's like a new experience, a new lifetime begins when that child is born. Is that the same with broken Matt Hardy?
I don't know, but my big question is, was it Jeff Hardy that was doing that rendition of In the Pines at the beginning of the video? I can only hope. To the studio line, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Chris from Las Vegas.
Chris, you're very calm today. What happened?
Sedated.
Did you just get back from the sweet party?
That's it. I've been at the sweet party for the last couple of days.
Something you're at Snoop's house.
Dude, you should have seen Chris first at the all-you-can-eat steak dinner at Texas Day Brazil. I never seen anybody eat as much as Chris.
My claim to fame is how much I can put down. But I actually want to talk a little ring psychology because... And I heard you talking about Nakamura not selling, and Dean Ambrose, he's another great example.
Oh, he's worse. Dean Ambrose is much worse.
Yeah, he's much worse. So let's just take him for example, and let's say he gets injured, and he's getting a match with Del Rio. Seth Rollins, the ones who injured him, and then he can't do his big moves. He tries, he wins the match, he violently says on the microphone, "Hey, I wasn't able to do my stuff tonight, but I got the victory, and I'm going to be ready by the time I get to Battleground to face Rollins. Me, as the consumer, I'm going to go, here, WWE, here's my money, here. How much would you like me to play?" I am upset now as a fan that I didn't get to see him do his moves, and I know he's going to be ready, and I'm going to want to see him beat him up.
You're right. You're preaching to the choir here, dude.
I don't understand why we need to have them see the do their moves. It would be more interested. Hey, now he's a little bit of an underdog. He's been hurt. Give me here's my money.
Well, you see, they want to put smiles on faces. And if they do a show where he doesn't do all of his moves, you will leave with a frown on your face.
And apparently fans are stupid because, as they've shown in Japan a million times, and as they showed here in the States for years and years and years until they stopped doing this because they had to put smiles on faces, in a time like that where the guy can try his move but he can't pull it off, he will eventually, when it comes time, break out a new move that he uses, and people can be happy with that. But no, we need signature moves. We need the opening and the music and the entrance and all those Pavlovian things because people are stupid, I guess.
Can I go with one more point? Because I was going to get this out on Monday, if you don't mind.
Sure, Chris.
Okay, so the other thing we're talking, I was talking about Ryder, and you have Young. Those are underdogs. Now, I don't know. I know you don't watch sports, but even in the simplest things that you can understand, Brian, if you were, I know there was supposed to be a Sasquatch team or something up in Washington. If they lost all the time, you wouldn't pay your money to see them. Everybody loves an underdog, but you got to know that underdog has talent, and actually has a chance. And people like to root for those people. But if you beat them like a drum, I don't want to pay to see them.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you very much for your call and Sasquatch analogy there.
Under Squatch.
Yeah, but here, listen up. Listen. So, first off, I don't need to watch sports to understand the concept of an underdog. I could read a story. I could read The Wacky Little Wombat to my daughter. I'm sure there's an underdog in there because it's a timeless story.
Davey and Goliath.
One of the keys to having an underdog is it's an underdog. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't. I'll explain further. You can't, let's say you have 50 teams, okay, in any sport or in any wombat book. You have 50 teams. It is impossible for every single one of them to be underdogs, right? 50% would have to be underdogs. Less than 50%, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, you have a roster with 95 underdogs. This is stupid. This is why there should be a pecking order. You have jobbers who always lose. And then you have mid-carders who... kind of do 50-50, actually. There's nothing wrong with 50-50 if like 30% of the roster is 50-50. And then you've got main eventers who almost never lose. And I'm not talking two guys. I'm talking like eight. That's why in the old days you had squash matches, to keep the pecking order. And so you'd have more guys that never lost. So then it would be something when people who never lost face each other and be like, man. And you know what? When I hear these numbskulls today talk about, Brian, it ain't the 80s anymore. You can't do, like, oh man, I could go for hours here, but I don't have time.
Japan.
What I'm trying to say here is that there was a feud a couple of years ago. It actually wasn't even a feud, it was a match. It was Ryback, who had not lost and had won a bunch of squash matches for an extended period of time. And he was going to face CM Punk, who was the longest reigning WWE champion in a generation or whatever they billed him as. And they put him in a cage. And so one guy had to lose. Now, in every match that we see in WWE, one guy has to lose. And nowadays, nobody cares about any of them. But you know what? This popped a number. Because fans suddenly realized, my God, we've got Ryback here, who's been doing a Goldberg streak. And we have Punk, who's been champion forever. One of these two dudes is going to lose, and that means something. And you know what? It did a great number. Because even in 2014 and 2015 and 2016, you can make wins and losses matter. You can make people care about which guy is going to win, and they'll pay their money to find out who's going to win and who's going to lose. But you have to do it right. You have to have guys that don't lose anymore. And you have to have guys that lose every single time. And you have to have a small number of guys in the mid-card that they trade wins and losses. Because you know what? When everybody trades wins and losses, but you have a 15% that never lose, and you have a 15% that never win, when you're one of those guys down there in the pack that breaks through, suddenly it means something. You can't have anybody break through when 95% of your guys are 50-50 guys. And if you break through, next thing you know, you're 50-50 again. This is not, it's not magic. It's not something you can't do anymore. It's something they just don't do. And to those guys that got mad at me when, what the hell, it's not 3MB, what's the name of this, the Social Outcasts.
Social Outcasts.
Social Outcasts came out and they were dressed as Washington, Adams, and Jefferson in a comedy segment. And they faced Enzo and Cass in a match where Enzo and Cass won in 10 seconds with one move. And I was so irate about it. And then I had people go, oh, all Brian wants is squash matches. But then WWE gives him a squash match and he's mad about it. You can't see the difference between an old school squash match, which was designed to highlight a main eventer and their moves and get them over, and that stupid comedy nothing segment on Raw. If you can't see the difference, I don't know what to tell you. Back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. The calm after the storm. And the calm before the storm that will be Chael Sonnen appearing on Wrestling Observer Radio later on today for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. I'm sure Chael will have a lot to say. It's coming up later today with Dave and I. If you missed last night's Wrestling Observer Radio, you missed out. You'll also be missing out tonight on the Brian and Vinny Show. We got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. Lucha Underground, Ultimo Lucha Dos, Episodes 1 and 2, as well as the Cruiserweight Classic and NXT, all coming up tonight on the Brian and Vinny Show. Plus, Granny will give her Vegas thoughts, only for subscribers. Subscribers also get access to the brand new Wrestling Observer newsletter with, I think, 50,000 words this week of news and info on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Every week there is a new Observer. The New York Times, Wall Street Journal of Professional Wrestling, up at WrestlingObserver.com. Never a better time to sign up with the draft coming up as well. You get all of the Observer's back issues, all of the new shows, 8,000 shows in the archives for subscribers as well. If you are a wrestling fan, there is no better place in the world than WrestlingObserver.com. New Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare went up. Carl Stern has been doing shows every single day this month. So much great stuff up there, so check that out, everybody.
Oh, by the way, Cruiserweight Classic, too. The preview to that, the Josh Nason, Alan Farrell, the Matt Farmer, a bunch of other people were in on, too, is up there, and I'll retweet out the link to those as well, because they did a great job there, too.
That's right. I plugged that yesterday, in fact, on this program as well.
I plug it today, too. It's still going on. This Cruiserweight Classic won't stop.
Every day, there will be a Cruiserweight Classic deal, and if not, there will now, because I command it like Matt Hardy.
Like green beans.
Back tomorrow, everybody. Thanks, Mike. Everybody at Byline, callers and listeners. We'll talk to you again next time. Observer Live, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network.